Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Welcome to The Creative Spark. Today's guest, Sean Tinney, is a speaker, coach, and author of Practice Everything, a book born from a year of deep transition, creative discipline, and grieving the loss of his brother. Sean helps people navigate reinvention moments, reclaim purpose, and build lives grounded in presence, creativity, and self-leadership. Blending psychology, the Enneagram, transformational coaching, and lived experience, Sean guides individuals through the turning points that shape identity. With a background in building culture and learning programs at companies like Gooder Sunglasses, he now dedicates his work to helping others reconnect with their inner guidance, unlock their potential, and create meaning through practice. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's awesome to be here chatting with you today.
Oh, likewise, buddy. Yeah, we just reconnected. We connected recently, but man, we have so much in common and have navigated many of the same trials during our lives and recently. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to just kind of diving deeper and letting everybody know a little bit more about you and what you're doing. And yeah, just the growth that we share, right? So thank you.
For sure. Thank you for this opportunity to chat with you. And, you know, just it's so cool the way that we were connected by two different people thought that we should meet. And I was like, wow, okay, I need to know this guy, you know?
Yes, wonderful guys who have both been on my show also.
Cool, yeah.
Justin and Steve. Yeah, Justin Foster and Steve Harper.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to come across like-minded folks, right? And
Totally. So, yeah, that was Steve, you know, Steve's thing, the ripple effect. And he's like, oh, I got to connect you to my friend Brian. And like Justin says the same thing. I was like, wow, okay, if these people are both aiming me in this direction, this is a path I should for sure follow.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, any friend of those two is a friend of mine.
Yeah, nice.
So this is, I'm going to start off with kind of a heavy one, you know, so have you, you lost your brother recently as well. You know, we both share that and it was rough. What did you learn about yourself through the process of that? And how has that changed you, going forward?
Oh man, so many things. I think, well, I'm 43 now. I was, he died about 2 years ago now. So up until that point, I would say that I had no real access to my emotions. I mean, let's not say like I wasn't like a human or anything, like I could feel things, but they were mostly blunted, or I was really good at numbing the intense emotions, especially sadness and anger.
Yeah.
And after he passed, there was just no way to stop those feelings. It was way too powerful. So that was a incredible gift ultimately, but I mean, it was extremely painful, you know, just realizing like how much grief I'd been carrying my whole life probably to that point. But ultimately, you know, when you lose someone, especially someone close to you, just really your whole world changes, you know? It's a complete shift. So
yeah,
talk of that, and you know, moving through all the stages of grief, and there, it's not linear at all, and you can return to any stage at any time, and just realizing, oh man, there's a lot going on in me and I need to tend to it. But the way that I had handled my, you know, life and career to that point was like, I could do something about anything in my life. But when you lose someone, there's nothing you can do about it. You have to accept it. And so I had to learn to be willing to sit still and just feel sad and feel scared and feel regret and, you know, all of anger and all the things. And there's nothing to do about feelings. That you just have to feel them. Yeah. They shift on their own. I had no idea about that, you know, but it was like, okay, well, I'm getting acquainted with all these feelings and overwhelming effect. But some part of the gift of that is that there just is nothing you can do about it. And so ultimately surrendering to it and accepting what is real allows new things to come forward. And I think it was a surprise to me how much joy is on the other side of a really good crying session.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can so relate. And I mean, for me, as a lot of people know, you know, I had open heart surgery 3 weeks before my brother passed. So I had no choice but forced to be, you know, since I was resting and healing, yeah. I just really, really had to sit with it. Not like I tried to avoid it, but it certainly opened up a lot of latent feelings that I had, you know, shoved down myself in different ways. And it's I feel so much lighter and so much gratitude, even though, you know, if I could, you know, have them back, then I would.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah. Well, man, in that case, I mean, you were physically recovering from like a heart, you know, injury, well, essentially, but then that loss is like, it's the most emotional injury you could sustain. And so the physical organ and the emotional energetic point were also, impacted at the same time, right?
Well, for sure. And they say, you know, after having that surgery, that particular surgery, it will make you emotional. And it did. And you know, and then you throw the passing of my brother on top of that, it was just like, woo, I learned how to receive during that experience. And I was so grateful for every little thing somebody did, even the smallest little thing, I would start to well up.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, it sounds like I'll wager that we may be similar in our desire to keep the focus on someone else, right? It's much easier to help someone else move through something. But when they turn to you and say, well, how can I help you? For me, it was always like, oh, no, I'm good. You know, like I don't need anything. But then when Nolan passed away and people would just, you know, like you said, just any kindness or any, caring gesture would become overwhelming because it's like, okay, I can't reject this. And it's a part of healing is our community with each other, our recognition of our shared humanity and our, you know, basic dignity. We're all on this ball whipping through space around a ball of flames. Like none of this makes any sense, but it's all happening and we're in it together for better or worse.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Your book, Practice Everything, kind of came out of your experience, or it can help contribute to your putting it together?
Oh yeah, man. So I'd been working in a writer's group for about 9 months. It was a year-long group, and I was making significant headway on another book, just kind of about traveling and, you know, moving through a different phase of my life where I'd kind of left a, you know, whole business and identity behind. And I, after Nolan passed, I was like, man, I can't write, you know, another line in this book. It just doesn't make sense. I don't care to tell this story anymore. Wow. But I could feel the stark relief of like, just realizing, you know, we're not here for that long. And all of us have something inside that wants out, that wants to be communicated or expressed in some way. And we're here to, you know, to tend that spark and fan the flames and to whatever extent we can. And I could just feel like, wow, you know, I want to stay in my creative momentum. I want to stay in touch with my brother And I feel like in a way to honor him and also to honor the part of me that, you know, felt like, all right, there's something that I need to write for myself. It's maybe for a younger version of me. And it's turned out it's for this version of me too. Like the book is ultimately, I realize now it's kind of a like compassionate way to move through anything that feels too difficult to process. It's like, if you see everything as practice, then there's no way to go wrong. You can only learn something from each experience. So yeah, that the book itself was a little bit of work over a long time, but I just showed up every day and did one thing, just the least, literally the least I could do. And the goal was to just do the least I could every single day. And ultimately, it only took about 6 months for that to turn into a book. I was amazed. But the process, you know, shaped me and helped me to understand kind of what it was I was trying to bring forward. And it really helped to feel like, okay, you know, I'm kind of like offering this as a gift to myself and also to Nolan, and as a way to stay in touch with just sort of like, I don't know what it is, like honoring the gift of having been his big brother or something like that. You know, there's just like the desire to connect with and bring forward something important from within.
I love that. And it's really, really cleverly done. I mean, it's like a piece of art in and of itself. I really enjoy it. And I have really enjoyed it. And I'll definitely put the link in for people to check out after they listen to this. But yeah, you know, it's a wonderful book where you can just kind of thumb through a different part each day and just kind of, or a different day, and then just get a little nugget to kind of just focus on. I mean, for example, it is because you have begun that you have already won. And that's so true. Just taking that first step, no matter mm-hmm. what it is that you're working toward, right? I mean, that's just one of the many pages with, you know, that you have in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that speaks to the battle of resistance that we all face, right? It's all the things that are worth doing are going to be difficult. The things that are bad for us are, they taste great and they're easy to access and easy to do. You know, it's like, it's really easy to fall apart, man, but it's really difficult to integrate and to build up. And so that's the thing I have. One of the first things that came through when I started working on the book was just the idea that everything is practice. We're always practicing everything all the time, whether we mean to or not, even vegging out on the couch. You know, you're practicing that if you're doing it. So might as well do it consciously. And then from there, it's like, okay, if everything is practice, then practice is progress. So it moves the finish line from something far off in the future to into this moment. If I am doing the thing that I intend to do, then my identity is found in that action, right? Writers write, painters paint, runners run. If I'm doing it, then I'm making progress on that practice. And then connecting that to the idea of success. So everything is practice. Practice is progress. Progress is success, where every step of the journey is moving us closer to the finish line. But most of us only count that last step as the important one, right? Like, all right, I did it. I made it. But then what happens? We immediately look ahead and we're like, oh, well, on to the next thing, right? It's hard to even pause to celebrate that we accomplished something that we had set out to do. So if everything is practice, practice is progress, progress is success, success is now, because now is all there is. You know, there is only ever today. Tomorrow never arrives. So it's a philosophy of just bringing our attention back to the moment, which is the one place our minds seem just unable to exist in. It's, you know, rumination and regret about the past, anticipations about the future, but this here is all we really ever have. So the purpose of practice is to be here and to be able to apply yourself to this moment.
Yeah,
as it is
the journey, right? It's the journey.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And to be here for the journey.
yes now look back at it. Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
What surprised you the most during your creative process putting this together? You're in the creative process.
Oh yeah. Well, what was most surprising is that it's kind of like Well, you're a musician as well, right? Have you written music before?
I play a little guitar. I wouldn't necessarily call myself a musician, but thank you.
Yeah. Sure. Well, there you go. But so in the process of making music, there are things that just happen that are like, oh, wow, I love the way that came together. I couldn't have predicted how that, sound or lyric or whatever would appear. But you can only find that stuff if you're in the flow, if you're in the process of creating, right? So, what I did to write this book, it felt way too daunting to write a whole book. So I just bought a watercolor sketchbook and I said, all right, every single day I'm going to write one spread, just whatever comes to mind, something like, struggle is required for growth or whatever, just the acorn contains the oak, anything that feels like it's been important to me long enough to stick around in my mind. And I would just like kind of do a little doodle and put the words in there. And then so, whatever, 3 months later, I had filled up the book with things. And so it's like, all right, there's something in here that represents wisdom that's been meaningful to me in a practical sense, not just airy fairy philosophy stuff, but like things that feel workable in some way. And so as I would work through it, okay, I got the whole book done. Then I'm like, all right, I need to move this into the computer so I can print it. So every day I'll move one spread into the computer. And I'm like pixel perfect perfectionist about how everything's going. But ultimately what that would do is I'm sitting with that spread and I'm going, okay, there's 10 things on this page. What's the most important thing? And then I would get that thing into there and then just kind of sit with it and think about it. So I had one of the spreads, for instance, says begin again, again, again. And as I was writing that, I noticed the word again contains the two words again. Like if you begin again, 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 oh, you've created some kind of a gain there. You're never starting over at the very beginning. But to keep a fresh mind, a beginner's mind about anything allows us to see things that we would otherwise miss. So I found little things like that in the process of just moving things from one format to another, and that continued to happen like throughout the process. One of them is like the arrow is in flight, the target is in sight. And I was like, oh, insight, insight. Ha, cool. I'd like discover these little things about language or about the philosophy as I was creating it. And my mind would sit with each spread. And it kind of the way I feel about it is like it was teaching me about itself as I was in the process of bringing it to life.
Yeah, we are here to teach what it is that we need to learn ourselves, right?
Oh man, yeah, for sure. And I can't tell you how many times, let's see, I printed this book in like March. Can't tell you how many times I've been speaking to a friend or expressing some challenge, and then I realize like, well, I did write the prescription for myself, so if I just follow the thing that I wrote down that I need to do, I know what to do actually. It's like, put yourself on the path, do the least you can, keep going, let action show you something new, and just hold open space for the questions so that there's room to learn something new about what's going on.
How has this creative process helped you rebuild your identity, after of all that you've been through recently?
Yeah. Oh, man. That's just an ongoing process, but anytime we lose a person, a relationship, a role or a job, it can be, there's a lot of grief involved. And I think in the first few experiences I had with that, where I'd once built a creative agency and then decided I actually don't care about helping anyone sell anything on the internet. I need to go in some other direction, and kind of followed my inner compass out the door. I was surprised to be met with grief at that loss of that identity, the perception of being important in some way or having some, cool client roster or network or something. I was like, oh, I'm not that person anymore. But not practically, in the sense that I wasn't going to that office or doing that kind of work, but in the sense that no, the network is not lost, the wisdom is not lost, it's all preserved and just transformed into some other thing. I think the creative process has helped me to see that one thing can always turn into something else. And in fact, that's always what's happening. So the mind wants to cling to permanence, which is impossible. There is nothing. Nothing is permanent. Everything, even the desk I'm looking at right now or my computer itself, is just a whole bunch of vibrating atoms. You know, the illusion of solid form is persistent, but it's still an illusion. So recognizing that I myself am that way as well. You know, whatever thoughts appear in my mind or memories that come up or the frame of mind or attitude I have about something, those things are all shifting constantly. And so to be willing to let go of my need for control and just flow with life and participate in the process and develop a little bit of faith in life's ability to be way more creative than I could ever be and open myself up to the possibilities that are coming my way and just work with them as they are and work with whatever's going on me as it is without applying so much judgment and expectation.
I love that.
I mean, while you've already kind of done this a little bit, what like some specific advice you would give to someone going through a major transition?
It's kind of like some version of that, like just doing the best you can, allowing yourself to be free from certainly the expectations of others, but we all carry our own little, you know, internal critics and perfectionists and the voices that tell us we're not enough in some way. Mm-hmm. And we can acknowledge that while whatever we've done or whatever situation we're in, it's, you know, it's all something that we participated in creating. We can create ourselves anew in any moment. We can let go of a relationship that no longer serves us. We can leave a job that is toxic. We can step forward into a future of our own creation. And that is always daunting and it always comes with grief and it always comes with facing the void, uncertainty, right? Like it's so much easier to stay in a familiar hell than risk the leap into an unfamiliar heaven. So just being willing to, you know, honor yourself for showing up, for having a sense of inner direction and guidance and being willing to trust it enough to move through limbo, which feels, oh my God, just so frustrating. Like it really is. You can't force, you know, you can't force a flower to grow, right? It will eventually blossom, but at no point in its journey to that moment is it wrong or bad or failing or anything like that. And we're very much the same way. So I think just given ourselves credit for what we are doing, even if it doesn't feel like enough, just doing the least you can and keeping it going and stringing a few days of that together. Just taking good care of yourself, you know, right? Yeah. to the best of your ability. Yeah.
No, I agree. We humans, spiritual beings having human experiences, like to try to control things. And it's,
oh,
not,
yeah.
I'm kind of a little bit of an in-between right now myself. And I like how you said, you know, just try to take care of yourself. And that's what I'm doing, is just you know, taking care of myself with food and exercise and movement and just trying to stay creative and just kind of doing the basics. You know, the podcast, the YouTube channel, some other things while I navigate what's next and you know, allow it to come through and listen intuitively, you know?
And that's amazing, Brian. That's a lot of stuff, man. Some people are just in their bathrobes on the living room floor drinking orange juice out of the carton, you know?
You're doing Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
That's 6 days of the week, but I'm kidding. I don't have a bathrobe. They're my underwear. But
two wins in a row. Oh my God, that's so funny.
No, but you know, we have to pat ourselves in the back, and that's something I did not do enough of, you know, through the years, and so I've become much better at that too. Mm-hmm. And I know you have as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, like as you're in this, I'm in a transitional moment myself. It's easy to feel for me, like I'm like, okay, well now I need to make something of myself. And I was on a,
Be respectful. Respectful.
Yeah, totally. Right. I went on a walk with my mom the other day, and I said the same thing. You know, I got, well, let's see if I can make something of myself. And she was like, Sean, you've made something of yourself. You've gone through this life in a way that has been, you know, generous and kind to others, and that's enough. And I was like, oh, wow, yeah. I realized to the extent to which make something of myself, ultimately to my little inner scoreboard, means make money.
Right there with you, brother. Yeah.
Right. Like, because that's the metric of success. And man, it just, you know, we need money obviously to survive in the world, but that is not a metric of success for fulfillment or presence or friendship or joy or anything that really means anything at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that I've really had to work through myself. And, you know, I would like to share in a bigger way. But I need to just like really, and I've finally really been able to let in and just like, okay, you know, just those kind comments that do come my way, or this really helped me, Brian, or I love this podcast, or this or that, you know, thank you. Before, I don't think I was able to really let them in because I wanted to be bigger, you know? Sure. Mm-hmm. And now I am, and it does feel good. And it really is just about doing our best, sharing, and just, it's not up to us necessarily who it's going to reach, you know, it'll reach who it's supposed to reach. Right.
And yeah, yeah, exactly. And you're doing your thing.
Pardon me.
Right. You're doing your work. It's like, yes. I think it's in the Bhagavad Gita, some version of like, it's better to do your own Dharma, your own work poorly than someone else's perfectly.
Yes. Yeah. For a long time, I would try to kind of see what other people are doing, try to do it in that vein or whatever. It's like, it never worked. And it's been a long time since I did that. But yet, ultimately, it's we have to be our authentic self and to share what needs and wants to come through us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we'll find the right people.
Right. And whatever that is, you know what it is.
Yeah.
But for so many reasons, we stand in our own way. You know, we hold back. We don't share. We don't try. Maybe we have a hidden practice, like guitar for me is just my, you know, I'm playing by myself in my room most of the time, 99% of the time. Mm-hmm. But 0.1% of the time I release something and I put it out online and I'm like, all right, cool. That feels risky, but it's out there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I love it. You know, it's, yeah.
So I'm a big fan of astrology and human design. And for me, you know, learning about myself, it kind of gave me confirmation about how I felt and how I, you know, just the intuitive, just the intuitive guidance that I was getting about myself and how I was showing up in the world. It just, you know, it helped me relax into that a little bit instead of maybe feeling like something was wrong with me. And I know you're a big fan of the Enneagram.
Yeah.
And tell me our listeners a little bit about what that is and maybe how you utilize it.
For sure. So Enneagram is like a personality typing system, more or less. But what it describes is, so Ennea is the Greek word for 9. Gram is like diagram or drawing. So the Enneagram itself is a 9-pointed circle. It's like a triangle and kind of a, I don't know what the other shape is, weird wiggly lines. but it connects 9 different types to each other. So I first learned about this in 2014. I was on a trip consulting for a startup in Australia and came into this office and all these cubicles had numbers on them and the people were referring to, oh, he's a 9, she's a 3, whatever. I was like, what the heck are you guys talking about? And they're like, oh, you haven't heard of the Enneagram? They talked me through it. And one of the guys there helped to type me. And so I'm a type 9 with a strong one wing. What that the 9 is like the peacemaker, the harmonizer, the person who wants everyone around them to be in harmony and getting along, and can see the path to harmony, but will usually leave themselves out of the equation. Sort of like a self-forgetting type that is that's good at going with the flow and being like, oh, it's all good. Like whatever you guys want is fine with me.
I think I'm a 9 too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So you'll understand then the challenge for 9s, which every type has its own challenge, but 9s are right in the middle of the gut center, which deals with anger and control. Mm. And so for 9s being, seeing themselves as not very not angry, like in fact never really getting mad or anything like that, but ultimately dealing with rage, because when you suppress anger completely, it only comes out like a volcano, like when you can't stop it anymore. And then at that moment, it usually comes with, here's everything I've been holding back for the last however long, 9 months or something, you know, just like blah. It just comes out all at once and is totally surprising and overwhelming. Is that something that is familiar to you?
Well, as you, so it hasn't happened for probably about 15 years, but there was out of the blue, probably happened two or three times when I was dealing with my son, maybe if he didn't want to do something for me or didn't, you know, wasn't doing what I asked him to do, it would just, I would explode, you know, and there wasn't anything physical or anything like that or any like directed at him. Particularly, it would just, I would just get really frustrated and oh my, it startled the hell out of me. And and he called it hulking.
Exactly.
It's right. Really embarrassing to look back at it now, but oh my God, I can totally relate. I mean, it's been forever since I've done it, and you know, but yeah,
for sure. Well, and part of the lesson is, you know, when you're always trying to make peace, what do they say? If you make peace with the world, you make a war within yourself, right? So if you're the one who's always absorbing the tension of conflict and being like, you know what, it's okay, like whatever's important to me, it doesn't matter. it's no big deal. It's like you lose a little bit of self-respect, a little bit of self-trust, and you push that little bit of anger down. And ultimately that the only way to handle that much anger and to hold it and to contain it is to disconnect from it. And so we kind of get sort of numbing out is the thing for nines. There's, you know, eat too much, drink too much, sleep too much, recreational drugs, TV, whatever it is, to self-soothe. We get really disconnected from our internal experience of anger, which is ultimately where self-protection, assertiveness, these kinds of things come from, is our ability to say, you know, that doesn't work for me, and let someone else deal with the tension instead of being like, oh yeah, cool, whatever you want's fine, always, you know, and just feeling like a doormat. And when I was going through all the types, when I was first getting typed, I was like, oh, type 7, the enthusiast, or type 2, the helper, you know, those sound fun. And then when I got to type 9, I was like, oh, damn it.
Right.
Like I felt like, oh, I just feel like a doormat, like all the things I don't like about myself, this system is putting right in my face, you know, and it shows you all your strengths as well. Like, cool, great. I can see multiple perspectives. I can, you know, I have big picture thinker, go with the flow, harmony, feel connected to life, the universe and everything, all this stuff. It's great, great. But like, I'm mostly focused on how I don't show up for myself, how I abandon myself and I don't use my voice. And I, you know, it backfires on me all the time and creates a crappy experience. And so, I felt at first, I was like, ugh, gross. Like this sucks. I don't want to be a nine. Yeah. And then ultimately,
I don't want anybody to know that I'm a nine.
Right. Right. But then ultimately I realized, hey man, it's just patterns. Like it's just personality. It's not personal. It's actually totally liberating to realize that these patterns are, well-documented, well understood and shared by many, many other people on earth. Like sounds like the two of us here. Yeah. Right. So that led me to, ultimately that system, I rolled it out in my company, you know, was like creatively focused and started using it there, started typing my friends and family and everyone I shared it with. It seemed to have this really powerful self-reflecting, sort of like, it's like showing yourself to yourself in a kind of a beautiful way where you can see all of the difficult parts and then realize, oh, this isn't personal to me. This is just how my personality is. It's not who I am. It's just how I tend to be. And it's shared by others as well. So that sense of shame, right? For the ways I haven't shown up for myself or spoken up for myself and all the challenges that's brought my way. That is not something that I need to be ashamed of and feel alone as a result of, because shame is an isolating emotion. It's actually the root that connects me to all of humanity. It's well understood by all. We just don't talk about it because it sucks to say, oh, you know, I'm really not good at speaking up for myself or standing up for myself. And I really go along to get along, and that doesn't really work for me, and I don't know how to say anything about it or do something differently.
That's a great way to look at it, though. Just like, it's my connection to humanity, and everybody else is connected as well, and they're got their things that they're working on, right? And mm-hmm. Looking back, I used to give my power away a lot in relationships, or just not really speak my truth, and that never mm-hmm. ended up working out. Nobody liked that, right? Me or my partner,
right?
Just it's been a process of working through all that and speaking my voice and really owning it. And it feels great. You know, once we can get to that place, it's so freeing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what you're doing with your work, your speaking, your book, your podcast, everything that you're doing to hone and express your creative voice, Brian, mm-hmm. that is your work. And you know what it feels like to not do it, to let yourself down, to abandon in some way, and to shrink and shapeshift and all that. But you also know what it's like to do it, to show up, to speak up, to hold the line on something. And you can feel into all of that, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just, yeah.
So that's the practice, man. Like, it's, you're never in a point where like, oh, I should be over this by now, or I should know how to handle this better or differently. You know, it's like, no, I'm in this moment with the resources I have at this moment available to me, and I'm doing my best. And I can see in every past circumstance where I've done well or poorly according that I was doing my best at the time, like with what I knew and who I was, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's this system, the Enneagram, has sort of shaped my career in a way, because I ended up taking that to Gooder Sunglasses when they were really, you know, just kind of getting started, kind of scrappy, like under 20 people, and then rolled that out all the way as we grew all the way to, you know, 165 ish. Wow. Before I left. And it was so cool to see the way that, self-awareness and self-reflection and awareness of others, and what their motivations are, and the fact that each motivator is totally valid. The perspectives are valid. The truths are true. And multiple things can be true at once, and multiple perspectives can be valid at once. And we can actually work to understand each other. That was just such a game changer for me. And it provided, and for us as a company, in every context, it provided shared language, shared tools, a way to talk about and understand people, beyond just saying, oh, you know, that person's a jerk or whatever. It's like, well, okay, there's probably more to them than that. And we can try to understand where they're coming from and meet in the middle somehow.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I think it just helps once people can like really identify that, utilizing that or human design or what have you. I think it just helps them maybe give themselves some grace, right? Because it's, a lot of times we'll beat ourselves up for those things that we feel like we should be doing better, mm-hmm. or behaving better, or just, you know what I mean? Like, this is how you're wired. Okay, totally. Great. Now, what can we do about it?
Totally, yeah. Man. Yeah. The way I felt about it was like I'd grown up inside of a dark room with a flashlight, and I for sure had like found all the furniture and windows and doors and all the things in there. But when I read the Enneagram, it was like someone just turned on the lights, and I was like, oh yeah, that's all right there. I don't have to go on some, you know, soul quest to discover who I am. I can just see like, all right, here's what I'm working with here. I don't need to make it more personal or more of a burden than it is. It's just a bunch of patterns that I happen to be really familiar with and aware of, and I can start to work with them without identifying with them. And that's the key shift, man, is that it's all work of awareness. Awareness shifts things on its own. I mean, there's something about, it's the same with feelings, right? If you just sit with them, they change on their own. We're always afraid like, oh, this is never going to go away. But when you look into it, you know, fear is just a feeling. Whatever we're afraid of, ultimately we're just afraid of feeling something, and we can totally handle any feeling. Ultimately, it's just some raw sensation in the body, right? Like, got butterflies in my tummy, or I feel a pressure in my chest, or my thoughts are racing, or whatever that is. And just the ability to notice that with a little sense of space, without identifying, without saying I'm angry because this, that, and the other thing, and attaching to the story, just going, oh, you know, there's like a knot in my gut right now. And as I notice that, it starts to shift and open up a little bit. And then I realize there's some thoughts coming up about things that I want to say to this person. Okay, I see all those things. And just by witnessing it, it shifts on its own and it moves around enough for us to access something vital that allows us to connect with ourselves and to connect with our basic dignity and our basic goodness and go, okay, yeah, that's there. And that's here as a resource for me to draw from. And I can do something with it.
Yeah. That self-awareness is king.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it comes and goes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Oh, it's so interesting because I've always tried to be the observer in my own experience, but yet we all have our blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
And, right. There's light shown on them through different things, whether it's a grief experience or whether it's a connection with somebody or what have you. And you know, if we're really kind of trying to pay attention and really be open to, I don't know, I found for myself, just being willing to kind of like learn, then there's possibility and it just gets easier.
But. Yeah, totally. And to develop a sense of like inner friendship, like if you were to, you know, treat yourself like you do would a friend, which most of us are horrible at. Like we're just the worst to ourselves, you know.
Right.
Like how different would life be? Or I saw someone posted something that was like, if you you know, took over your friend's body for a year and you had to take care of it and return it to them after a year, how would you treat it? How would you treat their mind? How would you treat their body? And you're like, oh, right. I'm doing that for myself. I'm doing that for my future self. What are the gifts that I can give to my future self since I am here taking care of this body, taking care of this mind? What do I need to do to show up and be, you know, for me, the best Sean that I can be today? What does Sean need in order to get through this day and you know, be a little better off?
I love that analogy. Yeah. About lending your body to a friend. Yeah. That really hits home. Thank you. Wow. Does low self-esteem ever affect your creativity?
Oh yeah, of course, man. I mean, I think like, especially with creativity, it's like the most vulnerable creative self-expression is about the most vulnerable thing I can think of that we can do as humans. Whenever we make something creative, whether it's art or music or poetry or anything, when we put that thing forward into the world, if someone criticizes it, it feels like they're criticizing us, but not only us, like the real us, the most essential version of ourselves, right? And so we kind of creators attached to their creations in a way that is like I identify with this thing that I made. And so I think that not only holds us back a lot from even starting to make something, but for sure sharing it, or even feeling worthy of making anything in the first place, you know?
Yeah. How do you deal with it? How do you counter it?
Well, action is the antidote to anxiety. Yeah. You know, if you just start, just do something, do anything, to get over that initial resistance that is the little game of the mind, you know. It's like, oh, this thing, you think you, who do you think you are to share this message? Who do you think you are to sing this song or make this art or whatever? Well, it's like, well, I'm a creator. I'm a musician. I'm an artist. You know, if I'm doing it, I am it. And so we can step into the persona with a little bit of flair. You know, you can make up the artistic version of yourself or the musician version of you that puts on these shoes or, you know, a leather jacket or something to be like, all right, I'm this version of me today while I'm doing this thing. And we can allow ourselves to play a role and hold it lightly, play it sincerely, but not take it so seriously. Right.
Yeah. Do you find yourself thinking about or guiding your art as you were creating it so that like it'll be more marketable, or do you just go with your heart and intuition and just let it come out?
Oh man. I don't think there's any way to make something for a market that, retrieves any amount of soul in the process.
I'm totally
backwards. Yeah. I remember hearing Prince one time. He was like, to the artist, a song is a success as soon as it's written, but then it goes out into the market and people decide if it's good or bad or if it's going to make money or not or whatever. But he's like, to the artist, the mere existence is the success. And so, man, that totally resonated with me. And that's kind of, that's what's come through in this book, Practice Everything, is like just doing the thing is the success. Like it's happening now. It's happening while you're doing it. So for me, moving that finish line or that metric that is this good or not, all the way out of everyone else's hands and out of any attachment to capitalism, and just going, well, if I am doing a thing that I enjoy, then I'm living my life in an enjoyable way. And having spent my time doing something that connected me to myself, to a state of flow, to creativity and self-expression, that is the win. And that is enough. And I don't have to share it. It doesn't have to make money. It doesn't have to do anything but exist. And I just, that has shifted things for me, into a place of presence and joy in the process and joy in the moment, instead of what are people going to think about this? Or is this going to make money? Or is it going to, you know, become popular or whatever?
20,000 views or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't, if you like it, then do it and make it. And there's a concept in, well, I guess it's physics, but like to me, it's music, sympathetic resonance. Like if you're sitting in front of a piano and you press a C note, all the strings that are also that note in every different octave will start to resonate. Try it next time you're at a piano. Just press one key, lift it up, and listen to how much lower and higher versions of that note you can hear. Okay. Because whenever we put something out into the world, it resonates. It pings against everything else that's just like it. So if someone's hearing this conversation and something in them is sparking, they're like, yeah, you know, like whatever, they're vibing with it. It's because it's in them. It's because it's in you, right?
Yes.
So what we are doing here is our thing. And if we're doing our thing in our way and we're enjoying it, then whoever else has that kind of similar thing in them, it's going to hit them and vibe with them. And that's going to ripple through the world in a totally unpredictable way. That's far beyond our control, but that's the best thing we can do for each other, is to care for ourselves and do things that we love, because that will ripple through the world and start to resonate in a way that makes it better without really ever having to leave the space of your own moment.
No, thank you for that reminder. You're absolutely right. And I know from myself, I am happiest when I am just like putting together a poem, or, you know what I mean, a song or whatever, writing, and just that connection to source, creating. And
Then you move through the world in a different way. And the way that you move through shifts everyone you meet in ways you can't predict, and maybe they go do their thing and they make something, and you know, so we're all impacting each other. There's no way to avoid it. And so we might as well do our best on purpose.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can't, we're almost done. We're winding down here. I want to ask you a final question. What would you, if you could go back and share some advice with your 20-year-old self, what would you say?
Man, keep going, do your best. I think there's some sense of like just potential, you know, as a young person. It's like, well, what am I gonna make of myself? And it's like, well, you don't have to figure that all the way out. You just have to do your best today, and then, you know, life is just a bunch of days stacked together. So don't make it a bigger deal than it is. You don't have to try to, you know, win the whole tournament at once. Just play the play the hand you're dealt right now against the 9 other people sitting there with you.
Thank you, Sean. It has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, my friend.
Likewise. Thank you so much for this opportunity and making the time and space for us to connect like this. It's been wonderful.
Anytime, and love to have you back sometime. And in the meantime, friends, check out the links that I'm going to be posting. You can see his book that we've been talking about, Practice Everything, at practiceeverything.com, but I'll have it all in the links. And it's really wonderful. And you're a great guy, Sean, and I really appreciate what you're doing in the world.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Brian.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson and all that is going on in his Creative Spark world, as well as this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. We love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.